Welcome back to another episode of Toys on Tap. We are bringing on Zero Pop Art, who is doing incredible stuff with wood robots. He has been all over the art scene, painting, graphic design, murals, now the wood robots, and of course he's done some resin work. So you do not want to miss this episode. Plus, there's a nitty-gritty on the back end that you will want to go to the Patreon for. If you want to support Toys on Tap, you can like, follow, rate, review wherever you get podcasts. If you want to jump on and support us even more, you can go to patreon.com/toysontap. If you want to even jump on to see unboxings and stuff, you can go to youtube.com/toysontap. That's where you're going to find us. And if you want to jump on and follow us on all socials at Toys on Tap. Now let's get back to this week's episode of Toys on Tap. Heck yeah. Do you have your own studio space?
Not attached to your house? I do. It's a few minutes away from home.
Okay.
I used to work out in the garage for years, so, but now I'm in a, like a office slash warehouse type setting.
Is that a like a lazy boy over your right shoulder?
Yeah.
I gotta be honest, if I had a studio and that was in it, I'm getting no work done.
All right. Well, that's for mandatory work breaks.
Yeah, mandatory work breaks. Yeah, the supervisor's coming down on you hard, huh?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Hey, I'm pumped that you're on. Your art and the things that you make, I call them toys. I hope you also call them toys.
Some days.
Okay.
Yeah, I think they're a hybrid.
Okay. I like that. But they don't fit what's generally on Toys on Tap. And so I was really excited to bring you on to talk through this because, I was standing in the grocery store today, like scrolling all the way back on your feed, just looking at all the different ones.
Yeah.
And you have a very unique style and I love what you're making. So this is the place for you.
Thanks. I appreciate that. Yeah. I was listening to some of your interviews and I'm glad to be here as well. I think you got great questions and I think you run a pretty thoughtful show. So I appreciate that. I consider it all art. So like I see toy makers like work in resin, plastics, you know, you name it, and they're really doing a form of sculpture. Mm-hmm. And so I guess I consider what I do sculpture. I consider it art toys. I consider it designer toys. Although like I think I consider them actually toys as much as the most of the DIY toy makers out there. I think they treat it like sculpture.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's kind of like we've got a million words for the same thing.
Yeah.
We're all kind of talking about the same thing.
I want to keep going on that because I think it's incredible to be able to explain it to people on the outside of the community because toy is such a loaded word. Sure. But before we do that, please introduce yourself. Tell us who you are, what you do.
My name is Paulo and I'm an artist, multiple discipline artist, and I run Zero Pop Art, and it's a company that is me as the designer, and I design wooden robots and art surrounding them.
Yeah, take two. This is, I won't put anything like that in there. I'll just put the take two part in there. So before we start,
any more editing work for you? I'm sorry.
Not a problem. I've gotten good at it. Before we dive in, please tell us who you are and what you do.
My name is Paulo and I do Zero Pop Art. That was worse.
No, I like that one. What if I just put them both together? I do this and we put the first one and then I hit take two and then we do it again.
Oh, Oh, it's going to be awful. We're going to have to redo this whole interview.
I love that. Yeah. I think we're kind of tapping on something that's interesting, because most of the toys that we get, like all these things behind me, they're called, I mean, other than the vintage ones in there, I'm not going to play with the Frank Kozik like statue. I'm not going to play with some of the toys that are on there, because though they're called toy, they're not a toy.
Yeah, any toys you see like out in the wild too, or that are being collectible. I don't know what at what point, I guess the line is blurred now, and it's almost immediate. But like, when did toys become collectible? When did they stop being thought of as a plaything and they're now a collectible?
Yeah,
I think that goes back decades, obviously. But I'm up until like the present day, I mean, people buy toys just to collect them, I think, for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, I do that with like Ninja Turtle bootlegs for sure. That's my favorite one. Right. The most playable, because they're made so crappily, like they're made to be what they are. But also, I collect them, and I would never open them and touch them.
Yeah.
So I definitely get that. You as an artist in what you do, and even your views on what a toy is, what collectibles are and stuff, have all been changed, altered, or formed by you as a kid and your view of toys then and what you played with. And then, so take us back. What toys did you grow up with? What cartoons you watch in? Tell us about that childhood.
Well, I was an 80s kid for sure. Born in 76. So I was right at that age for Saturday morning cartoons. And then that translated into G.I. Joe's, Transformers, Masters of the Universe, anything and everything in between. Whatever I could get my hands on. Loved all that stuff. Garbage Pail Kids, Muscle Men. I don't know if you remember those.
Yeah.
The toys that came in cereal boxes too, like definitely my imagination was sparked, I think, pretty early on with just character design. So like the Smurfs, were like one like character, like template. And then you had a million different Smurfs.
Yeah.
Same thing with G.I. Joe, Masters of the Universe. Like templates, and then, you know, your imagination is basically the limit of how many characters you can then come up with. So I think that's carried me.
And that makes, I mean, especially 80s, 90s, when you're trying to translate to toys, one character template is really helpful when making toys.
Sure. Yeah. Mold making. And just like, yeah, character design in general, I think is always, as soon as I could pick up a pencil or a crayon or a marker, like, and start drawing, I was designing characters. I was inventing stories. Also, like, copying what I was seeing. I remember one, maybe like third or fourth grade, I had to make up a comic strip as like an art class assignment. And I literally took the Thundercats characters. I don't remember the story, but I ran them through some story that I came up with. Yeah. But I took like the Lion-O and Mumra, and I did this whole like comic book with them. And just, I didn't stop drawing or making stuff when I was a kid. It just happened all the time.
Which I like, that's those are the moments that when those happen when we're kids, I would say like the ones that became an artist, that was never squashed. That was never like pushed aside. The ones that didn't become an artist, somehow that got like brushed aside. So at what point did your love for art kind of kickstart? I know you're like running these characters through stories and kind of like drawing and all that stuff. When did it really spark something different in you?
It's always been there.
Okay.
So it's hard to pinpoint, you know, I think it's just always been there. I saw like art as a kid in as like the same level as like playing with toys. Like you had playing with toys, you had the kind of video games, you had going outside and playing, and you had art. It was just like, these are the categories, and like that's just one of the categories, and it's just part of my life, like throughout my childhood, into my teenage years, and into adulthood.
Yeah. As well. When so, you, I mean, school and art classes and stuff. Tell me about that kind of thing, because that I know for me, art classes killed my desire to want to do art, because it was like, this is how you draw a human eye. This is how you, and I didn't care about a human eye. I cared about the.
Sounds like maybe the art teacher you had was like the coach, and they weren't supposed to be teaching the art class, and they got thrown in there, and they shouldn't have been.
That like, is exactly how it felt.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, I don't know. We can get philosophical really quickly.
Let's do it.
What was the question?
Tell me about you going through art classes and that type of stuff through high school and middle school.
So art classes, like K through 12, straight A's. Never wanted to leave art class. So every other class was not A's. And so I was drawing in all my other classes and like always just thinking about art and thinking about making and doing stuff rather than focusing on schoolwork. But I still remember like doing projects in my art classes growing up. And like, I think there was some of that negativity, to be fair, from like other people, you know, other students. But I've always had it in me as a part of me that like, even if I ran into a naysayer or ran into negativity, like, I don't know, man, it just didn't stick to me. It bounced off of me. Like I didn't care. It was encouraged at home. I was given art supplies at an early age and, you know, whatever I wanted to do, like, just do it. Like watercolors, coloring books, drawing, like very early, like my mom worked in an office. So I would, okay, I'm going to draw a dinosaur, and I would draw a dinosaur on a piece of paper, and she would take it to the office. And I'm like, I want 10 copies from the Xerox machine. And then she'd bring those home. And then I would color each one a different color to like customize each one. And I'd have like a whole book of them.
Yeah.
Character design again. So
you were making prints way back then, just sign and number, sign and number.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I loved it, you know.
Yeah. I do remember doing that kind of stuff. But yeah, I think those art classes, it probably was the coach that came in and just destroyed me. But going through, I mean, that then has to filter into college or some kind of artistic endeavor after high school. What did that look like for you?
Went to school for graphic design.
Yep.
So went that route. And that was great because that was when, you know, the iMacs were coming out, the Apple computers were coming out, Photoshop was getting to be more of a powerful program and easier to use. And so got into graphic design, spent years doing that. Not really a passion for it. Like, I think design is powerful and it's amazing, but working in it as a profession really wasn't for me. I, again, like just an artist at heart. So didn't really click for me. I think a lot of artists can do it, but it wasn't something I kept doing. After working some freelance for a number of years, opening up an art gallery, because the art just stayed with me the whole time, running an art gallery for a few years, showing my art, showing other people's arts, which that was a real like time for me to learn about like how others perceive art and what they're trying to show out in the world too. And representing other artists was interesting and just gave me different perspectives. So, here I am.
Did you find that going into some kind of graphic design stuff was killing the creative stuff inside you the second it turned into a job?
It wasn't the second it turned into a job. It's just, I think I might have thought that there would be more creativity to it. And in a lot of ways, I'm sure there is. And for lots of folks, I'm sure they can find it. But it's so fast paced. It's so, and we're talking years ago. So like, even then it was, they want you to work really fast and be a perfectionist and get everything right the first time. And time is money. And it was too much of a grind for me to work in that world. I think I'm having bad flashbacks right now of some of it, of like working late nights on magazine layouts and that type of thing. And it's just, thankless work.
Yeah. No one knows the name of the person that made the magazine. They just know the name of the magazine.
Right. Yeah, sure. Yeah. That's a good way to look at it.
I think I've always been told that like graphic design, when you do it professionally, so much of it is enlarge this text, change the font, move here, like that type of stuff, which sounds, if it's true, sounds god awful.
Oh, and it can be maddening. If you're working in a big firm and you're just getting these instructions and they're coming back to you, and if you go through like a whole day's grind on something and you end up back where you started anyway, you just want to bang your head on the desk. I mean, if you just come back around to your original idea that you tried to tell them anyway, like, so what did we spend all day doing? What did we spend all week doing? Like things like that.
Yeah. Where did we go from there? I mean, working in that type of a job and trying to, I mean, realistically not die every day at work because you're so irritated. How did we exit that, and how did we continue to still love art?
Great question. It might be a cliche at this point to call it some sort of therapy or some sort of relief, but it really is. And time doesn't exist when you're working on something that you really are into and you love it. And it's just, I don't know. I don't think I question it too much. I've just always made stuff. It's always there. Even when it wasn't something I could sell or make money on or make a business out of, it was still there and I would still use it. But after school, going to school for design and working a number of years in graphic design as a freelancer, shortly after that, spending a few years running a business with my wife, which was an art gallery, like I'd mentioned. And so that kind of transitioned into community organizing as well, putting on events, putting on art markets and art fairs, working behind the scenes for organizations like that. And that was for a number of years. And the whole time, just like either continuing to paint, continuing to draw, or just continuing to make things. And having sporadic success with selling paintings or getting commissions. So that was, really like the middle part of my journey. I moved on to mural making. So I would be painting murals professionally for a number of years. And so, like, you know, some things are side hustles until they're not.
Mm-hmm.
And then they replace, you know, like selling paintings in galleries would be like my main thing for a while. Mural making would be the side hustle until like the murals took over for a while. And through all that, having kids too. So raising kids while working in the studio too, like part-time, sometimes full-time.
Yeah. Which, that's crazy. I mean, the jumps from different art styles and then the jumps between side hustle and main and side and main seems like such a roller coaster. I did murals for a little bit, and I've never felt more exhausted but more whole at the same time.
Sure.
Because you're just working 12-hour days, but you can see the progress, you can see the
and it's so physical, and that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
Again, like I mentioned, time going by while making stuff, that's a good example, is working on a wall for a day or a few days or a week. Like, the time can really melt away when you're working on something that like that. And as part of a team too.
Yeah.
Those can be really fun, can be really rewarding.
With your mural stuff, I mean, going between gallery and mural, those are so different. How did you switch back and forth or in there, or like actually just keep going maybe fluid like between those two?
Well, it's really just like what can you book as a gig? Like, if you can get a mural job, okay. So,
Empire Blister. Empire Blisters. Specializing in action figure blisters. 3.75 inch or 1/18 inch. 19 different styles. Two sizes of clamshell figure cases. Four different bulk pack options. Quantities of 100 sample packs available. Empire Blisters.
Now sponsor Toys on Tap.
That means a 10% off coupon on checkout. Use code Toys on Tap 10. That's TOYSOMTAP 10. Empire Blisters.
Working up a concept for the wall, whoever's paying you, or sometimes you're just working for supplies, or if it's part of like a mural fest, like, you know, they'll pay you, and working up the concept for that. And so there's, you know, it's kind of multitasking and having a lot of plates spinning in the air at the same time. So trying to stay organized, trying to stay, you know, in a multitasking kind of frame of mind.
Mm-hmm.
The initiative, I think, like for artists, at least for me, can be, I've got a show coming up. So you have a deadline. So that deadline, you know, gives you like that ticking clock of like, okay, you know, I've only got so many days or weeks to get this thing done. So I find motivation in deadlines.
That, I mean, people that can't stick to a deadline though, drive me nuts. So the motivation with deadlines, that's a refresh. Like, I like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if somebody said you could do a gallery show and it's 20 paintings and they don't give you a date, I think I would find it pretty hard to even start. But if somebody said like, okay, in 2 months, gallery show over here, you know, 20 paintings, like, okay, I would get started today, I think.
Yeah. So the, at some point we get to Zero Pop Art as being the Instagram that gets posted and stuff like that. And I think it's around 2020.
And it felt It felt like that too. At some point, we got to we got to zero pop art. That's exactly right. I want that to be my bio.
That can for sure be it. And at some
somehow point, we got here.
So because you're doing gallery, mural, all kinds of different art, and then somewhere around 2020, the world shuts down, and zero pop art is birthed, and it starts with, from what I can tell, smaller works and designs, paintings or graphic design work, and then it slowly transitions into like more physical things, which resin, and then now into the bread and butter of the wood blocked character. So tell me about that progression. We start that in 2020, I'm assuming because the world is done.
Yeah. Well, I 2020 wasn't the reason, and it wasn't the start of it. It started in 2019, because I'm originally from Michigan, and moved to North Carolina in 2018, 2019. And so with that move, like my gallery connections, my mural connections, and all of that, I kind of left that behind in Michigan. And so I was really starting over anyway. And the world changing in 2020 really saw me obviously staying at home a lot and being in the studio. I had the garage studio at the time. But I had already had it in my mind, like, I want to do something different. I want to do other things. I've been doing the paintings and the murals for a number of years. And I was just feeling like I needed to change anyway. And so I started experimenting in the studio with different things. Different types of painting, different mediums, and being online a lot, looking through like Instagram, Pinterest, Facebook, I started seeing toy makers. I started seeing like a mixture of the resin artists, but not really understanding what I was looking at, people making wooden robots and wooden creatures and wooden just like toys of like any kind. Started seeing some of that and seeing that, like, seeing videos on YouTube of mold making, resin casting. So I was still kind of messing around with painting, but not on a large scale. And saw the resin casting and was super interested in that. And so, I started with some Sculpey clay and started making some characters and made a few different molds for them. And that was cool. And posted some of the painted finished works on Facebook. And then I had the website going already. So I'm like, I'll just post these on the website. And the website was originally supposed to be t-shirt designs and like, just like art prints. Like, I'll start this business. Came up with the name Zero Pop Art because I wanted it to be, it could be like anything, whatever I felt like working on, like t-shirt design, art prints, sculptures, paintings. So I'm influenced by pop art, and adding the word zero in the front of it was kind of like, always had this character in my mind for a number of years called Zero, and he would just be like a goofy robot and just kind of just like be his own thing. So came up with Zero Pop Art. Like, the website was okay. Like, I was kind of selling some things here and there, like some friends, some family, but people were finding it on Instagram. They were finding it on Facebook. Sold a couple of the resin characters, and I was shocked. Like, okay, so I'm making these things out of clay. I'm making molds. I'm painting them, and then I'm selling them. Like, that's pretty cool. Like, that felt good, that process. Like, I really enjoyed that process. And then, like I told you, I saw inspirational stuff online of people making wood characters.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I'll start like seeing how many of these different things I could make where it's like a head and a body and feet, dangly arms and all that. So made a bunch of designs, painted them up, was really enjoying them. And I was making goofy videos online. I was making like TikToks with them. Mm-hmm. And like nothing was really happening. And my son suggested, like, he saw my TikTok account and like the videos weren't really getting viewed. And he's like, you should make a new account. So I made a new account for Zero Pop Art and just started posting stuff. And I had a bunch of videos go viral. And like some of them have like a million views on TikTok. And So there'll be like, I called them robot roundup videos where I just showed like six or seven of the robots that I worked on. There would be like some big ones, some little ones. And I'm going to grab one real quick.
Heck yeah. Show and tell.
So there would be like different sizes, different colors.
Yeah.
And they'd be on screen for like a second or two. And then this guy flashed on there. And I posted that video on like a Wednesday or Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
And by Friday, the video had gone viral and I had like 55 orders on the website for that guy. And it's like, well, I've only got this one. So that weekend.
That's all you did.
Yeah. That weekend I had to put together 55 of those. And
if you can hold it up one more time, I got to describe this for the people that are listening. It's my favorite one because it for me in my brain resembles Baymax, the right. Disney. Yeah. But yeah. It just, without showing any emotion, it feels like there's emotion in the eyes of the robot, which is so crazy to, and it's six parts, right?
Sure. It's got a blocky square kind of body, blocky square legs/feet, rectangle arms, and then like a rectangle head.
And they're all made out of wood, correct?
Yeah.
Painted. And then my favorite, I mean, I don't know why this is a favorite of mine, is the black lines around each edge. I don't know why that's a favorite of mine.
So it's just to exaggerate like the volumetric
nature of
it. Yeah.
And it's so how long did it take you to make the first one, and then multiply that over the course of a weekend when you're crushing out 55?
Right. Probably a few hours on the first one because just trying to get it right. And and this design since then, like 5 years ago, it's evolved slightly since then, so I can just kind of like mass produce the thing when I need to. Like a few hours maybe on the first one, and then I'll just turn it into an assembly line.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been a journey, I guess you could say, of like figuring out, okay, like, well, I have this thing and I put it together and like, and now I need 50 of them. Like, what does that look like? Like that, okay, I'm going to spend an amount of time in the wood shop, maybe a whole day of cutting pieces. And then if there's time, or if, you know, I'm tired or whatever, we got to start over again tomorrow. So then tomorrow I'm assembling, like attaching all the different pieces, gluing and nailing. That's probably like, if I'm making 50, then that's going to be a whole day.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't had a weekend where I've had 50 orders for quite a while though. Like, so I get a few orders over the weekend anymore. Just go from there, like figure out like, okay, I'm like a one person assembly line. Like, how do we figure this out? And I'll hire family to help me paint them if I'm doing a large number of them.
Yeah.
So I get to put the kids to work sometimes.
I like that. That sentence changed so radically in 2 seconds. I hire family. I put the kids to work.
I was being nice, and then I was being real.
Yeah. What I think resonates with the people that bought this piece, which, what is the name of this piece?
This is a Harbot.
And
just simple.
I think what resonates with that, with the people, is that, like, though it may seem simple, there's so much in that piece, and it looks great, and it's handmade, and it looks like a designer piece, and it all just, like, flows well, and it's attainable. Like, I can, the fact that you made it and you're describing that it's wood, it's nails, it's screws, it's paint, that feels tangible to me.
That's cool. Thank you. I think it's, I want to put thought into what I'm doing, and not overthink things a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think the Harbot came out of, like, well, I want to have a robot for every holiday.
Mm.
And maybe we'll start with Valentine's Day. And so that's going to be a little heart on his thing. And I'm sure you're going to find simple little Baymax-y looking things that have little hearts on them that date back to way before I started making them. So it's like, it's like the idea of a snowman or a scarecrow or, you know, like any other kind of little character. I think it's just this thing that moves through art and pop culture and pop art. And so, like, having a little robot with a little heart on it, I'm sure I didn't invent that, but, like, this is my take on it. And I think I kind of stopped there. I didn't do any more holiday themed robots. I do have holiday themed robots now, but that one took up a lot of my time, and there's different versions of them that I make as well.
Yeah.
And I think the theory in pop art is, like, okay, so it's a robot with a heart on it. And so, like, people know what that is.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, so that's a theme that I try to incorporate in the things that I'm doing, that, like, I'm not making things that are so otherworldly or alien that people don't understand them and can't relate to them.
Tell me how this has progressed, because that was early on, the heart robot.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have different sizes. Did you go back to resin ever? And now, like, you have so many different things that have progressed from that point. So, the difference, let's start with the resin. Did you end up going back to resin ever, or did you kind of just leave it?
Well, at that point, like early in 20 and 21, I was doing both.
Mm-hmm.
But the speed at which I had to work to make the resin figures versus assembling the wood robots and painting them, like, it's way faster to work on them. And that's what, you know, people were responding to in the videos and purchasing them off my website anyway. So, I mean, it really became a...
We interrupt this broadcast of Toys on Tap to bring you this.
Meanwhile, in a galaxy of bootleg treasures.
DOV2, we have engine failure. We must crash land on DKE Toy Planet.
Oh my, we're doomed.
Wait, salvation. Hooray, we're saved in DOV2. Limited edition custom artist made action figures in DKE Toys.
Check out www.dketoys.com for a full catalog.
Hooray for custom action figures.
DKE.
A simple commerce initiative. I love working with clay. I love making clay figures and the mold making process. It's so cool. It's so fun. It's expensive. It's time consuming. But that is why it looks so neat. I kept making parts. I kept making like small, simple molds for like circuit boards and gears and those types of things, because then I could make as many as I wanted and then attach them to the robots. So there's a bunch of bots out there that have pieces of resin on them that I made from molds. And that's kind of slowed down now. Mm-hmm. I've moved into a lot of found objects, a lot of stuff that I can go rescue and recycle. So that's kind of where I'm at now.
Dang it. That's not only are you making art, but you're doing it with recycled stuff so that like we can save the earth.
Yeah. Well, a little bit at a time.
Yeah. That's awesome. I think about the early years. I mean, I've only been doing this for like 4, going on maybe 5 years with resin and stuff. And it's like the early time of resin, how much damage I did to this poor globe, just making miscasts and destroying things. And doesn't feel well, like it within me.
I wish there was more recyclability to it.
Yeah.
I got to the point where I figured out, okay, when you're mold making and you have to retire a mold, you can chop it up and incorporate it into the next mold as that filler, things like that. I'm thinking about some pieces coming up where they can incorporate even more recycled materials in them. So I might have some things like this next year coming out.
Yeah,
have even more recycled stuff inside of them. I think there's, with resin casting, I think there's got to be ways to like reuse stuff.
Absolutely. I know there is with mold stuff, even past the point of cutting it up. There's a company called Silly Putt, I think, or Millie Putt. And it comes in a bottle and you just microwave the whole bottle and it's silicone that pours out on top and it just cures.
Okay.
And then when you're done, you can cut it up, put it back in the bottle and reuse it. But as far as resin, I mean, I think we're just damaging things. I wish there was like grind it down, maybe melt it down or something.
Yeah. See, I didn't even get to the pressure pot point.
Yeah.
Like I was still like very experimental and like a lot of my bots would come out and I'd have a lot of sanding and there would be some air bubbles that I'd have to work out or, you know, fill in or whatever. So I didn't even get to the pressure pot like status, my mold making yet. So,
I mean, you went with the wood, which is amazing, and you continue to develop it with smaller and then larger pieces. How did we start to figure out not only what to expand to from the initial pieces, but then also like the paint schemes on all these start to evolve rapidly? And if I remember correctly, it says like your Instagram title is Zero Pop Art, but some of the paint schemes resemble pop art or pop culture, which I'm like really into the idea that's like zero pop art, but also look at this. Mm-hmm. Like that feels fun. So tell me how we started to expand more towards wood. And then you got big, like some of those pieces look giant.
Some of the bigger ones are going to be commissions.
Okay. And
so on my website, I have the section where you can order a custom robot. So I'll do them for birthdays or whatever. Like people want them for themselves or for somebody else. They're usually gifts. So that's a good way for me to experiment. And I haven't said no to anybody yet for a commission. Like pretty much every idea that's been brought to me, I've been able to do. And that's been kind of the push for working larger. I want to go back also, and some of the things that I've made in the past, I want to make them larger. Mm-hmm.
Which ones?
Ones that I've sold. Mm-hmm. So like on my website, there's a section that's actually called sold. Mm-hmm. And it's got a history of the like last 5 years of ones that I've made and sold. And I considered them like one-offs, mm-hmm. that it was just a singular design, but I'd like to go back and like enlarge them. In a weird way, like working bigger is easier. Mm-hmm. It's somehow faster. And then working tiny, like I've got to use tiny brushes to make little marks on things sometimes. So it's more time consuming. I recently did Voltron, the lion Voltron for a show.
Toy de jour, right?
Yeah. And it was a little scary how quickly I got it done, because it looks complicated and it looks like it's got all these parts, and I like barely sketched it out. I just started like cutting the wood and just assembling it and painting it like almost all in the same day. Mm-hmm. And so yeah, I think bigger is better, and I'm going to keep pushing that.
Yeah. I think, which I like that phrasing, because at some point that means we're talking 3-4 foot wood robot. That's the hope.
Sure. Sure.
That the next interview that I have with you in a couple of years, there's one behind you that's like 6 feet.
Yeah. I don't think I've done a 4 foot tall one yet. Maybe 2.5, 3 I've already done.
Which that's already so much wood and so big.
Yeah, it's not a lot of wood actually.
Okay.
It just depends
on what
the design is. And like, so yeah, it just depends.
I think
I make things look like I put like I might attach fabric to them or wires or other little pieces of just things. And then I'll paint things to look volumetric. So they might look big and heavy, but they're kind of not at the same time.
Okay.
So
one of the things that I think about is for artists and really what it looks like to, because most artists push the envelope where they want to try new things. So they want to do things that they've never done before that are a little scary. And it through your, like what we've talked about through galleries and murals and all that stuff. Do you find that all of your past things that you've done from murals and galleries and paintings and graphic design are now informing and changing how you're doing the wood robots?
That's probably the best question for any kind of creative. 100%. Like, you know, you got to put in, people always talk about the 10,000 hours.
That right.
You
gotta Malcolm Gladwell.
And that might be something like a lot of people don't realize is all of the art disciplines, they all inform each other. They're all related, that because I'm going to spend a couple years just working on paintings, that will not help me with my sculpture. Like, that's not true. They help each other. They inform each other. They're all related. It's all the circle of life.
Yeah.
All coming back around. I remember in school building like wire armatures for the mm-hmm. inside of like paper mache sculptures. And then later, I'm like months later or whatever, going to go draw something. And I remember feeling like, oh, I have a much better understanding now how to draw this figure, because I sat and built one for hours and days and weeks. And mm-hmm. So I spent a lot of time painting. The painting comes through on the robots.
Yeah.
The painting is really what I'm trying to get at. And so I like the building, and the building of the bots gets me there, but it's really the painting that I'm interested in. And
yeah, which
the final step.
Yeah. And I think the fact that you have had painting and graphic design and stuff through your whole life, it's not a surprise that that part maybe even gives you the most life out of building these bots.
Sure. Yeah. And when I talk to people about them, that's really where I find the most joy in it is like the painting, the finishes, the textures, and like it, just finishing it off and bringing it to life.
Yeah.
Constant surprises and like trying new things, and that's what I live for.
Jeez, that's good. So I think the harder question then is, with all this in mind and with your current setting and choice being these types of bots and the different painting styles and stuff, what do you see as your next step for Zero Pop Art?
Probably more of what I've been doing, the bigger sizes, getting back a little bit to paintings as well. Yeah. And like I'm throughout the years, I've been constantly surprised on how the bots like affect people. What they see in them when they pick them up and look at them, how they make people happy.
Mm-hmm.
So if I can just keep doing that, I think that would be great.
Yeah.
Like if these things make people happy and they have a little collection of them and like they display them proudly, and yeah, that's pretty cool. So I don't know if I could ask for more.
I think that's it's honorable, because sometimes we, as makers, we will stop at is this item, does it have enough buyability? Do people want it on their shelf?
Right.
And I think to ask the further question of, how does it make people feel when they buy it? How does it make people feel when they see it, is a step in the right direction and a step past like, oh, is it buyable? A lot of stuff is buyable. I think it really just depends on how much they like you, but does it make them feel is a different question.
Yeah. And that's really where it's at.
Yeah.
I think you nailed it.
And I think maybe even full circle, as we're trying to figure out like, what is a toy? What are those types of things? Yeah. Maybe it transgresses toy when it goes into the spot of like, it made me feel this. And like, then it just moves a slight into art, or it moves just a bit.
Maybe we don't need categories.
Yeah, it just goes on my shelf anyway, so it doesn't matter what it is.
Yeah.
If it has bright colors, I'm into it.
If you like it, you like it.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming on Toys on Tap and talking all things art and robots. The last part of, we have two final parts. The last part of the main episode, we get to just have you plug everything, where people can go for commissions and buy the things that you have in stock, how they can get a hold of you for shows. I know I want to talk to you about a show that I'm planning next year. And then we'll jump into something called the Nitty Gritty, which goes on the Patreon. And I have a specific question just for you. About 10, 15 minutes. So for this, please plug all the stuff, website, anything that gets people to get to your art.
Okay. So zeropopart.com, it's pretty simple. That's where I post the things that I make. Instagram at zeropopart, that about covers it. I mean, of course, we're on Facebook and all the other things. Every day there's a new social media. So
yeah,
usually I'm on them. Zeropopart on TikTok as well. I don't post there too often, but there's some videos up there, and the zero the little robot gets on there and tries to make people laugh.
Heck yeah.
So
thank you so much for coming on. You are Toys on Tap's 201st episode, so
yeah.
We're starting off strong with you on the other side of 200, so I'm pumped.
That's amazing. That's an achievement.